So it's Christmas, or Christmas is coming up, I should say, and we're in this time of Advent, and, you know, it's Christmas coming, and it's fun to think about. And as we get into the message this morning, I was thinking about many different things, of course, but one is this thing where, you know, with Advent, we are waiting. We're waiting for Christmas. We're waiting for the coming of Jesus in that act. And so we wait together in that. And we're looking forward to Christmas. We're looking, you know, I remember as a child being so anxious for Christmas to come. And now it's coming so quick. I guess that comes with age. But you know, the anticipation of being able to open presents on Christmas morning and that kind of thing. The world is getting better, or so we're told. I did a little bit of research, and it's kind of exciting research, and I've talked about this before from up here. Did you know that in the last about 100 years, the global life expectancy global life expectancy has doubled. That's pretty impressive. That's pretty cool. Literacy. In 1900, literacy was just over 20% worldwide. Now, it is above 80% worldwide. It's pretty impressive. We made great strides for humanity in the last 100 years, you could say. In 1950, about 75% of the world was still living in extreme poverty, or what they consider extreme poverty. Now that number is down to about 10%. These are things that, you know, we don't hear very often because there are slow changes over long periods of time. And yet, these are realities from things that they've measured. Why am I bringing this up? Because it seems like even though our situations and circumstances in this world have gotten better in terms of wealth, in terms of literacy, in terms of knowledge, you could say, in terms of life expectancy overall, there's still something wrong. We're still waiting for something. Not all is right with the world. That is something that has been really heavy on my mind in the last month or so. Not all is right in this world. And I think personally, I'll just share personally, you know, my mother passed away this last month. And that has never been more in focus for me as it has been right now. There's a sense where if I go to my mother's house, and she's not there. The presence, her presence isn't there. And it's not right. Something's still not right. All of our strivings, all of the things that we have in this world, that the world has provided, really, it's great, these great things that I just talked about, which are really great. It's nice to be able to read. It's nice to be able to live a little longer and to have more wealth. But there's still something missing. There's still something wrong with the world. And it's frustrating. I want to look a little bit into this thing of not everything is right in the world. And kind of this waiting. This waiting for things to be made right, you could say, and the promise that we have in that. And so what we're going to do today is we're going to look at Isaiah. I'm kind of piggybacking off of what Darren did last week. And we're going to be looking at Isaiah 8 and 9. I think I put 9 in the bulletin, but 8 and 9, Isaiah 8 and 9. And we're going to look at this. But before I get into the actual text, I want to just remind ourselves a little bit about the context of Isaiah. And when we look at the books of the Bible, Isaiah is a prophetic book. It's a book of prophecy. It's in the Old Testament. This is before Jesus came, before our Savior came, before, Christmas, you could say. And so when prophecy was done, the language that is used with prophecy is signs and symbols. There's a lot of analogies and allegory and things like that that is done within the prophetic books. And so it's important to recognize that sometimes we might not understand what's all being said there because he was speaking to a people in that time in their culture. And so sometimes we miss a little bit and it can be hard to understand. And that's okay. I think that's okay. And the reason is because I also want to talk about kind of the big picture of prophecy. We're told in Hebrews, and actually I'm going to read a little bit of that. Hebrews chapter 1 says, and Hebrews is from the New Testament, by the way. So this is after Jesus came. And it's told in verse 1 that long ago, at many times and in many ways, God spoke to our fathers by the prophets. Okay? It's important to recognize that they recognize this. And that this was a way that God was revealing himself to his people in that time was through the prophets. And so it's important to recognize that was an avenue for God to talk to his people, okay? It's a way for him to talk to his people. But what does Hebrews say after it says that God spoke through the prophets? It says that, but in these last days, speaking currently now, these last days he has spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed the heir of all things, through whom also he created the world. And get this, he is the radiance of the glory of God and the exact imprint of his nature. The exact imprint of his nature. Hebrews there is speaking to Jesus. He's saying that Jesus is the one whom God has used to reveal himself to the world to the fullest extent. And it's important to recognize this because with the prophets had a, when they were revealing God to God's people, it was still veiled. There was still this shadow, you could say, that was preventing, it was almost like God was not being fully revealed to them. And it's important to recognize this so that we have a clear understanding that God is fully or most fully revealed to us by Jesus, okay? So if you're having doubts and you're reading through the Old Testament and you're confused about who God is, remember, God most clearly reveals himself as Jesus, okay? And so oftentimes we might read like Isaiah alone and we might be a little confused. It's important to look through it through the lens of Jesus. Put Jesus right here and then look at the prophets, then look at the Old Testament, okay? And so it's important to look in that way. And when we look at that, then we see how Jesus comes through the prophets, what's being said about him, because Jesus fulfilled the prophets and the law. So basic stuff, but it's something I just wanted to remind you. This is an amazing thing that God would reveal himself as a human person, okay? Like it said in Hebrews, it says that Jesus was the exact imprint of God's nature. This is a huge deal. Colossians, Darren talked about this last week, where in Colossians 1, it talks about how the fullness of God was pleased to dwell in Jesus. It baffles our mind. It kind of goes beyond all philosophy, you could say. It's an incredible thing to think that God would become a man, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about that in the Christmas story. Okay. Now, Israel had a problem with waiting on God, okay? Israel had a problem with waiting on God. You can put the first slide up, by the way. So Isaiah is prophesying he's prophesying to Israel from God about the future of Israel, about the future of Israel. And at this point, Israel is split into two nations. I just want to remind you this. Darren went over this somewhat last week. I actually have a map this time. I'm going to just go through this. So I have a couple things highlighted up here. Two tribes, Naphtali and Zebulun, I have pointed up there. Damascus way up in the north, Sea of Galilee. Okay, those are all in the north part. Actually, Damascus was owned by somebody else at this time. And Samaria is the capital of the northern kingdom. Okay, so that's where the northern kingdom was of Israel. One people split in two. Jerusalem is in the southern kingdom. And what was going on? The northern kingdom was kind of coming down into the southern kingdom, messing around with them a little bit. So the southern kingdom is trying to figure out what to do to, you know, defend themselves. And they hire the Assyrians from the north to come in and mess around with the northern kingdom so that they get off their backs. I don't know if you understand that, but just bear with me. But Isaiah, what we're going to read about a little bit in Isaiah 8 is he's imploring the southern kingdom to just wait on God and not hire the Assyrians to attack, because he's saying just wait on the Lord, just wait on the Lord, wait on God. And yet Israel has a problem with this. I'm going to read this and then I'll explain a little bit. For the Lord spoke thus to me with his strong hand upon me and warned me not to walk in the way of this people, saying, do not call conspiracy all that this people calls conspiracy, and do not fear what they fear, nor be in dread. But the Lord of hosts, him you shall honor as holy. Let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. And he will become a sanctuary, and a stone of offense, and a rock of stumbling to both houses of Israel, a trap and a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many shall stumble on it. They shall fall and be broken. They shall be snared and taken. I'm not going to get into the details of this too much. There is a reference here to Jesus as being the rock of stumbling. That's in 1 Corinthians. I'm not going to go into detail on that. But Isaiah here is saying basically, don't fear the kingdoms of the world, Israel. Don't fear the kingdoms of the world. And he's speaking to King Ahaz, just like Darren was saying last week. He's speaking to him, don't fear those other kingdoms. Fear God. Don't get caught up in the conspiracies of your day. Don't get caught up in the fears, the fear-mongering that's out there. Fear God. Fear God. Bind up the testimony. Seal the teaching among my disciples. So here Isaiah is making an appeal to the people, saying, bind up the testimony, seal the teaching of my disciples. And when he talks about testimony and teaching, he's speaking about testimony being, what is it that was in their past? What is it that God had done in there as the Israelites? What did God do for them in their past? Making an appeal to your experience with God in the past. What has God done for you? And then he says, seal up the teaching. The teaching would have been like the law, okay, the Old Testament law. He says, I will wait for the Lord, who is hiding his face from the house of Jacob, and I will hope in him. Behold, I and the children of Jacob. Oh, behold, I and the children whom the Lord has given me are signs and portents in Israel from the Lord of hosts who dwells on Mount Zion. And when they say to you, inquire of the mediums and the necromancers who chirp and mutter, should not a people inquire of their God? Should they inquire of the dead on behalf of the living? Again, this is an appeal. What the people were doing is they were going to mediums and they were going to dead people, trying to figure out what they should do, looking to dead people. And Isaiah is saying, why are you doing that? Why not look to God? Why not put your hope in God? Don't put your hope in dead people or people who you're paying to try to get answers from the dead. It's not going to work. He's saying, this doesn't make sense. This does not logically make sense. And so he says, don't do that. Why not inquire of God? To the teaching and the testimony, verse 20. Again, making an appeal to the teaching, to the law of God, and to their history as a people of God. If they will not speak according to this word, it is because they have no dawn. So he makes an appeal. He says, to the teaching and the testimony, to their experience with God, who God is, and he says, if they're not looking to the teaching of God and to their experience with God, and they're looking instead to the dead, it's like they don't have the dawn in them. What is the dawn? I don't know if you noticed today, but we actually had a dawn. The sun actually shone. Dawn happens when the sun rises. Well, when the earth turns and actually hits the sun. The sun. Okay, so this is the very beginning of talking about light and darkness, and we're going to continue in that vein. They will pass through the land, greatly distressed and hungry. And when they are hungry, they will be enraged and will speak contemptuously against their king and their God, and turn their faces upward. And they will look to the earth. They will look to the earth. But behold, distress and darkness, the gloom of anguish, and they will be thrust into thick darkness. Into thick darkness. What is Isaiah saying here? At least one thing he's saying, okay? He's saying, you're looking to all the wrong places for your hope. You're looking to earthly kingdoms. You're looking to the earth. You're looking to the earth. Earthly mindsets, earthly pleasures, earthly philosophies, witchcraft, looking to the dead. And what happens when we look to the earth? We just continue in darkness. Think about it. The dawn, again, is what we get from the dawn come from the earth? No, it comes from outside the earth. It's the sun breaking through to the earth. The sun rays coming in, and you go out there and you soak it up. It feels so good. This morning we actually had some sun. I can't express to you how awesome that is. But what happens is when we look to the earth to fulfill, all you're going to get is earthly results. We need something outside of the earth to fulfill. So here's this gloom and anguish and darkness and distress. And what happens next? We're given Isaiah 9. This goes right along with it. The chapter breaks, whatever. But there will be no gloom for her who was in anguish. In the former time, he brought into contempt. Here's the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the later times, in the latter time, he has made glorious the way of the sea, the land beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. So here, Isaiah is talking about how everybody was in gloom. This nation of Israel was in gloom. And now it will be taken out of the gloom because what happens? Well, we'll see. But he's speaking of this time when they're going to be brought out, this area, this land. And I wanted to point out this land, Naphtali and Zebulun up in the north and the Sea of Galilee. Why is this significant? Why is this so significant? Because that is where Jesus started his ministry. That is where Jesus was revealing himself as the Son of God. He started doing the miracles. He started doing his teaching up in that area. And so this area, the northern area, now was being used for what it was meant to be, that glorious way. You know, this is the glory of that land, that Jesus was there doing his work. The people who walked in darkness have seen a great light. Those who dwell in a land of deep darkness, on them a light has shone, or on them has light shone. You have multiplied the nation. You have increased its joy. They rejoice before you as with joy at the harvest, as they are glad when they divide the spoil. So there's this time, there's this language of, what do we see? Joy, abundance, right? Abundance. We see this hope that's there, that this is going to happen, that the people, as they're walking, looking to the earth, all of a sudden this light breaks through. Again, contrasting the light with the darkness, coming from outside of them into their lives. And with this light comes joy. You know, sunlight makes people happy a lot of times, all right? Joy. Increase. For the yoke of his burden and the staff for his shoulder, the rod of his oppressor, you have broken as on the day of Midian. For every boot of the tramping warrior in battle tumult and every garment rolled in blood will be burned as fuel for fire. This is pointing to Jesus fulfilling this as all the tools of misery are broken. All the tools of misery, the heavy yoke. He says, come to me and lift up my yoke, for my yoke is easy. My burden is light. Breaking the rod and the staff. And this is a reference to Midian, which is also a reference to Gideon in the time of Judges. And what happens there, I'm not going to go into it too much detail, but when they defeated the Midianites, they did it by what? Going in the dark, and there were torches that they were holding up and surrounded the enemy. And what happened? The enemy collapsed in on itself. The evil that was there collapsed in on itself and destroyed itself simply by revealing the light around that army. So some of you know that story. So again, pointing towards this no more fighting, no more trouble that way. This is pointing to Jesus again. For to us a child is born. To us a son is given, and the government shall be upon his shoulder, and his name shall be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the increase of his government and of peace there will be no end, on the throne of David and over his kingdom, to establish it and to uphold it with justice and with righteousness from this time forth and forevermore. The zeal of the Lord of hosts will do this. Again, just recapping this, a child is coming. That's what Isaiah is telling Israel, that a child is coming. And this was fulfilled by God coming as a child. A son is given, the Son of God, and he will govern. He will be the fulfillment of all things. A wonderful counselor. Wouldn't you just love to have a counselor who could just take care of all your problems? A mighty God. No longer having to rely on your own might. Everlasting Father, a father who never leaves. Doesn't have to go work somewhere. He's always there. Prince of Peace. Prince of Peace. Ruling with peace. His government always is increasing, and it's peaceful. He fulfills the Davidic covenant, the covenant that God made with David, that a king would rule forever on his throne. And he's going to uphold it in fairness, and it's all out of God's zeal, his passion, his love for his people. That's going to do it. These are the promises that were given to the people of God through Isaiah, from God. And we know that it was fulfilled in Christ, these things. We as Christians, in some sense, live in a perpetual state of Advent. You ever think about that? We are always waiting. We're waiting for him to come again. We live in this, you know, we celebrate Advent just for like a few weeks, but really, it's our lives. We're waiting. What are you waiting for? What are you waiting for? Are you waiting for enough money? For that breakthrough? The lottery? Or the job? Or that rich uncle? Maybe you're waiting for a spouse. You'd like to get married. You're just waiting. Or maybe you're waiting for comfort, you know? I felt that. Although, not the same as many people. Some, you know, maybe you're waiting. Maybe your spouse has died 20 years ago and you're still waiting. You're just waiting to get through that grief. You know, we view waiting as a bad thing so often. Like, well, can't you move on? Waiting for the dead to rise. I dare say that those of us who wait, who are waiting, are actually more in tune with the reality of Christianity than not. All is not right with the world. And when we try to solve the world's problems by looking to the earth, looking to, again, money, long life, all of these things that we look for in life, right? When we look to earthly things to fulfill us, and when we solve all the world's problems and we still come up short, because we're simply producing earthly, unfulfilling things. We need something that it comes from beyond us. Think about when God created Adam, he was breathed into by God. Not from the earth, not from himself, but by God. God is the one who sustains. We need something in order to live eternally. We need something that comes from outside of us, and that is God. And Jesus has come to restore that fellowship with God. He has come to give us that life. Jesus is the dawn of life into our life. He's the dawn of light into our world. And he broke through. He came through for us. He became a man, his creation. He became one of us. I'm continually fascinated by that. We need something beyond us to deliver us from all that is wrong in this world. So where's your hope, I guess, is what I'm asking. The Israelites had their hope in other nations, in their riches, they ended up not having riches after a while. That ran out. In their strength, in their intellect, in their knowledge. Or is our hope in the Lord alone? What are you relying on? Because when things go wrong, and they will, all that stuff goes away. But Jesus, the word of the Lord, remains forever. You know, I said that, I talked at the beginning about how everything, you know, there's a lot of good things happening in this world. And there are. I don't want to deny that, like, as part of, like I don't want to be a Debbie Downer that, like, you know, oh, it's too bad that the world's living longer, that people are living longer. Like, that's not, you know, that's actually a good thing, and we can celebrate that. But it's not what we put our hope in. Same thing with money, same thing with literacy or whatever. There's all these other stats. And you know, actually, I'm going to say this. We know from the stats, too, that people in this country, I don't know if you realize this or not, yes, worldwide, the life expectancy has gone up, but actually in this country, in the last years, the life expectancy has actually gone down. Why is that? We have more resources than ever. We've got more connections than ever with the internet and everything else. Why is it? Seems like something's wrong there. And a lot of it is because we're still unfulfilled with all of that stuff. We're looking to all of those things instead of putting our hope in Jesus. And even putting our hope in Jesus, that can be really hard. And it's not an easy thing. I don't want to give off the vibe that, you know, if you just put your hope in Jesus, everything is going to be perfect, because it ain't. But your focus will be on the right thing, and it will get you through the tough times one way or another, as I've experienced. So I just wanted to talk about that a little bit. If you've never, God loves you. Jesus came for you. He died for you on the cross. And he rose to life, and he makes available that life. And he has forgiven you of your sins. Will you accept that? Accept his love? I would like to invite you to do that in this time.